Fez?
Yes, here. May it please the court. My name is Cristahala Valdez, and I work with Federal Defender Services of the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and I am here representing James Vanderkinter, the defendant appellant in this matter. Your Honors, this argument rests on the fact that the guns that were seized from the maroon red SUV were seized illegally. Although a warrant was issued, that warrant did not include a search of the SUV. Specifically, the warrant referred to search of the barn and other accessory structures owned by John and Jeanette Bellin. And then it goes on to say, state, more particularly describing the barn and other accessory structures with the red maroon SUV behind it. That is important because, of course, the Fourth Amendment requires particularity as to the specific items to be searched. And when one looks at the face of this warrant and reads, looking at the four corners of it, it's clear that the warrant does not include a search of that vehicle. That's clear for a number of reasons. First of all, the SUV does not belong to John and Jeanette Bellin. In fact, not until after the search warrant was, or not until they came to execute the search warrant did they learn that, in fact, the SUV belonged or had last been registered by James Vanderkinter. Secondly, this is a situation where the government argues that the SUV could be determined to be an accessory structure. However, I think that goes a little far in defining what an accessory structure is. There's cases out there defining premises, and even those cases that talk about that include the land, include other buildings, but to include the vehicle.
Yeah, this argument strikes me as hyper-technical, frankly. We read warrants reasonably, and it is a reasonable reading of this warrant that the SUV was within the scope of the search, and not just in the warrant as a descriptive matter to help identify the property. The property was identified by a specific address in the warrant, so I think it's frankly unreasonable to read it the way that you're advancing, to say that the reason the SUV was mentioned was strictly for descriptive purposes only and it was not included in the scope of what was authorized in this search.
I understand what
you're... that's what the district court held.
Right, that's what the district court held. I understand what you're saying, but I understand the reference to a specific address, but this is rural Wisconsin.
Get that.
There is no house there, so there's no house number located on that. There's a barn, and clearly there's other buildings there. That's the first thing. So I think including the red maroon SUV isn't far-fetched.
It was
as a modifier.
And it's in the what I would call the prayer of the affidavit, the wherefore.
At the end. Right.
Specific permission is requested to search that vehicle. And I think the way you're reading the warrant itself is great when you've had the time to do it that you've had, but out on the scene of this search, I don't think your reading is the only reasonable reading of that.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying, but I also think it's important to note that Investigator Hain was the one who wrote the affidavit, and Investigator Hain was the one who executed the search. And frankly, if you take it to the next step, if you believe that the SUV was included, there is no probable cause within the affidavit. And I believe that if one looks at the affidavit, The only time the SUV is mentioned is when the citizen informant states that it's the barn with the red maroon SUV behind it. She states repeatedly, and it's repeatedly included in the affidavit, that the red or that Mr. Vanderkinter either told her or took her by Uncle Jack's barn and said that's where he stores his guns. At no point does she state that he said he stored them in the SUV. At no point does she state that Mr. Vanderkinter even said he owned the red maroon SUV.
Common sense overlays the affidavit, though, that
right.
A person may hide something like guns wherever they think they might control that location, whether it be in the barn or in the vehicle.
But, Your Honor, when you look at the affidavit, which is what you have to look at to determine the probable cause at the time the search warrant is signed, nothing in the affidavit says that Mr. Vanderkinter controls that red maroon SUV. Nowhere in the affidavit does it say that Mr. Vanderkinter last registered that SUV, that Mr. Vanderkinter had any access to that SUV. In fact, not until they executed the warrant did they do a check on the registration of the SUV and determine that it was last registered by Mr. Vanderkinter. So, in terms of probable cause in the affidavit, I don't think it exists as to that red maroon SUV.
Ms. Valdez, what if in place of the, in the language, described as a large barn with a red maroon SUV, what if it said a large old barn with a, I'm going to give you a farm implement.
A tractor, a John Deere tractor.
John Deere tractor. I'm trying to think of a model that might be big enough to house the weapons. What if it had that? Would your position still be that tractor with its canopy and, you know, today you can have high-tech instruments and tractors? And do you think that would give it a probable cause?
I don't, Your Honor, because I still don't think that there's any acknowledgement of control or ownership within the facts that you're giving me as to Mr. Vanderkinter having access to it. And I think that's what becomes important. And I see my rebuttal time light is on.
We'll make sure you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Quarterski?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Assistant United States Attorney Laura Katursky on behalf of the appellee, United States of America. The search warrant in this case listed the red maroon SUV in the description of the premises to be searched, and therefore the warrant itself authorized the search of the red maroon SUV for firearms as set forth on the face of the warrant. The officer searched the red maroon SUV. They recovered the 8 firearms and ammunition from that location, and that forms the basis of the charges in this case. The district court...
What if it said, describes an old barn with an ammonia tank, with an adjoining ammonia tank? You know, something we might find in rural Wisconsin.
So the question is whether probable cause to search the ammonia.
Let's say
tank.
It's right next to the barn, like the SUV.
Well, I think that would depend on whether the ammonia tank was a place where it would be reasonably plausible for the officers to infer that the defendant could have housed his firearms there.
So you would disagree and say my tractor example, they could. Examine the cab of the tractor.
Well, I'm not that familiar with tractors. I suppose I could imagine a tractor that would be similar to a vehicle in that it could house multiple
firearms.
From
metropolitan Wisconsin, apparently.
That's correct. but I think here the issue is twofold. You know, first, whether... the officer, investigator Hain, you know, was required to interpret the warrant with the most narrow interpretation possible of the locations to be searched on the premises? And the answer is no. This court has made clear, and the Supreme Court has made clear in Massachusetts versus Shepard, that the inquiry is whether the officer's interpretation of the locations to be searched was reasonable under all of the circumstances presented. And I think in this case, once you look at the affidavit, the affidavit itself contains both the same description that's set forth on the face of the warrant, as well as the final paragraph, which more clearly states the particular places on the premises that the officer is seeking to search.
Didn't the investigator actually write the warrant for the judge's signature?
He signed the affidavit, and his report reflects that he met with the assistant district attorney to prepare the affidavit. It's unclear from his report.
What they presented to the judge included a draft warrant, didn't it, that the judge simply signed?
That's correct.
So
I mean,
whether
that's what
the officer himself or the ADA, the document itself was prepared by the government, not the judge.
It appears so, yes, Your Honor. It's unclear whether the officer actually wrote the affidavit or whether the ADA did.
But the warrant itself was also written by whoever did the drafting.
Yes. There's no evidence that the judge had changed or deleted anything that was presented to him. The affidavit, the report reflects that the officer met with the ADA, they drafted the affidavit and the warrant together. They both signed the affidavit, and then they met with the judge, and the judge reviewed the affidavit and signed the warrant. And I think the second issue in terms of this case is, whether there was probable cause to search the SUV. And again, I think it does go back to, do these determinations need to be made in the most sort of, to use the court's term, overly technical manner. And here, the complainant was the defendant's ex-girlfriend. She was not an anonymous tipster. She had identified herself to law enforcement. She provided information subjecting herself to, her false statements. She subjected herself to possible retribution by the defendant, whom she was scared of.
Is this search sustainable under the automobile exception?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so. That's an alternative ground that this court could uphold the search.
There's enough in the district court's decision about the probable cause to support application of the automobile exception?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor. Even assuming, there are multiple grounds this court could affirm on, but even assuming that this court, rejected, found that the warrant was invalid and that good faith did not apply, once the officers got on the scene, assuming that the warrant only covered the barn and the accessory structures, at that point they had gained additional information. First they had met with Uncle Jack, who turned out to be not an uncle, but another individual, who stated that he did own the property. He was allowing the defendant to store some property there. Mr. Bellin stated that it was the defendant's red SUV that was parked behind the barn. At that point, once they arrived on the scene, they also ran the vehicle identification number. They found that it was last registered to Vanderkinter. And at that point, they also looked inside the back of the SUV, and they saw that the back seat had been put down, and there was at least something that was covered by a tarp in the back seat. And so I think that, even assuming that the warrant was invalid at that point, the officers had probable cause to search the vehicle, either under the automobile exception, or at that point, inevitable discovery would also apply.
What's his prior felony?
I believe he has two. One was for felon in possession, and another was for burglary.
Okay. So that the prior felon in possession was a state charge, I take it, which is why he was put into the federal system?
I believe so. I was not the prosecutor who handled the underlying case, so I'm not exactly sure, you know, why he was
it's just out of
why he was charged.
Curiosity.
Yeah. I'd also note that the district court correctly found that, you know, even if the warrant was found to be invalid, that
It's really not a question of invalidity of the warrant. There's no challenge to the validity of the warrant. It's about its scope and whether the search of the car was included within the scope. So it's not a question of invalidity.
Yes, Your Honor. Whether it was found to be, whether the search of the SUV was found to be outside of the scope or whether, you know, there was insufficient probable cause to search it. Here, I think the facts show that regardless, the officer was acting in good faith in seeking the warrant. And so even if the search wasn't covered by the warrant, the evidence should not be excluded under the good faith exception. He met with the ADA to prepare the affidavit. The affidavit stated in two separate places that he was seeking to search the SUV. And he also obtained a warrant that included in the description the SUV. So if there aren't any further questions, the United States respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Kordersky. Ms. Hala? Valdez?
Just a couple of points. First of all, Judge, he was charged in state court. His prior charge for felon in possession was in state court. Just
thank you.
Since I handled the
thank you.
Underlying case. I would disagree with the government's assertion that there is probable cause in this case established by the affidavit. And the reason I say that is because the only information that they really had involved information from Gail Mankey, the ex-girlfriend of Mr. Vanderkinter. At the time she gave the information, she had reunited with her husband, and she met with police officers, and she referred to one vehicle that she had seen Mr. Vanderkinter with, which was a blue and tan Chevy pickup, and she repeatedly referred to him stating that he kept his guns in storage at Uncle Jack's barn. The SUV, I think, is sufficiently different than the barn that it is not included with the warrant. But even if the court believes that that's a hyper-technical reading of the warrant, we do not believe that the affidavit establishes probable cause.
What about the automobile exception?
And as to the automobile exception, I still believe that in order to satisfy the automobile exception, there has to be some form of probable cause. And we would argue that based on the information they were given, that they didn't have probable cause. If one looks at what Mankey said, once they didn't find the guns in the barn, and I think one could conclude that she wasn't as reliable an informant. So I don't know that they had enough to establish that there was, in fact, probable cause to search that automobile, and therefore the automobile exception wouldn't apply. I think Tejada says is that it's not a mere probability that the evidence would be found there, or that a separate warrant could be issued, or as to probable cause, but it has to be a certainty. And more than a mere probability. And I think in this case that all that exists is the probability and not the certainty. Thank you.
To both counsel, the case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the United States, the fifth case, United States versus Washington.